So, Greg, let me open today's podcast by asking you a question. You ready for it?
Shoot.
What time's the 2 o'clock podcast?
It's in the neighborhood at 2 o'clock.
The best. I wish Maddie just would have popped open the audio quick, hearing you fumbling around your kitchen, going to your microwave and placing a cup of coffee in it. At what point did you brew that coffee, by the way?
I brewed it at 7 o'clock this morning, and I often have this debate with people as to how long the coffee can stay in the coffee pot until you won't drink it anymore. Because
yeah,
I'm someone who, I'll brew it at 7 in the morning, and then I will drink it at 9 at night, and I can't imagine that's a good thing.
I do the same thing. I'm a French press guy, and I make coffee first thing in the morning when I get up. Well, a lot of people are now. And I'll leave it in there all day long. And then sometimes before this podcast, or if it's in summer later on, 4 or 5 o'clock, I'll just throw some ice cubes in it and drink it cold. But I'm the same guy. There's always – you come into my kitchen, there's always a pot of coffee sitting there. And I didn't really understand it as a kid, but I remember going to my grandmother's house, and there would always be a pot of coffee sitting there.
Yeah.
And she'd always be pouring and sipping from it, like, pretty much all day long. And I remember thinking to myself, isn't that coffee bad by now? Like, is it? I used to think everything's like fruit, right? Like, it goes bad after a while. Like, at what point does grandma's coffee go bad? Because she's drinking it entire day.
And it's so true. And like, when you're a kid and you watch movies, right? Like, every movie has the scene where, well, not every movie, not like Star Wars didn't have it, but most movies that take place in the real world have that scene where somebody's having some trouble in life and they come over to somebody else's house and they're always like, why don't you stay for a cup of coffee? And you're like, who has coffee? Always brewing. But then you realize that you have coffee always brewing now that you're an adult and need to stay awake and don't want to have the benefit of cocaine in your system at all times.
The benefit. Oh, it brings so much joy to everybody's life, doesn't it? Just to keep you awake. Hey, one thing I did want to mention today that I didn't get a chance to mention last week, or really even the week before, Don McLeod, is that a name that means anything to you?
No, it does not, actually.
Don Smokey McLeod, does that mean anything to you as well? Anything?
No, but it sounds like someone who may have been the mayor of Vancouver at some point, based on what I know about Vancouver.
Well, hang on, close. He played in Vancouver with the Blazers back in the WHA. He was a goaltender. He passed away mid-March. And I've wanted to mention him on the podcast, and every time we do the podcast, I always don't even bother looking at my notes and just sort of freestyle with you. But Don Smokey McLeod passed away, I'll say March 11th or March 12th. And what was remarkable about him? One, do you know why he got his nickname, Don Smokey McLeod?
Could he smoke between periods?
He just smoked. He was always smoking.
Okay.
No real story there other than he smoked. But what he will go down for he was the first goaltender that I ever knew, and I really should fact check more on this one, but I think he was the first ever to use a curved stick. And he could fire the puck as hard as Hextall, as hard as Marty Brodeur, but he was that first guy in the 70s with the WHA who used a curved stick. And one of the great stories I was told about Smokey a while ago, and this is the era of the wild goaltender. I mean, you want to look at nutty goaltenders, go to the 70s, folks, specifically. And Don was one of them. Actually, interesting little note about Smokey was his right leg was 2 inches shorter than his left leg.
Whoa.
Yet he was still able to play a professional sport. But the great story, so he finished up his career in the WHA with the Quebec Nordiques. Okay, and the story that was told to me was, this is hilarious. So for his final contract offer, I'm not sure how many years it was, because this would have been 1978 or something like that. Anyway, I'm not sure how many years this was spread out over, but the Quebec Nordiques offered him, you ready for it, Wish?
Okay.
$99,999.99. But Smokey insisted on $100,000. Get ready for it. Quebec wouldn't budge, so he walked away. He walked away for a penny. 1 cent. He walked away and didn't play hockey again.
But come on, who among us wouldn't have done the same thing? I mean,
principal,
it is
sir.
Six-figure salary versus a five-figure salary.
100%. 100%. But how about that? Can you imagine the offer? We would like to offer you $99,999.99. No, my client really wants $100,000. Sorry, there's no deal to be made here. My client is walking away.
I sympathize with it. The first time that you make six figures must be an amazing time. Merrick, what was it like?
Oh, I don't know what that feels like. I don't know. I don't know. The money I have makes noise in my pocket. I don't know what six figures feels like. I have no
idea. WrestleMania was last night, as you know, Merrick.
I heard it was great. I got all these tweets and DMs about saying it's the best WrestleMania ever. It was fantastic. And
not the best ever, but
I didn't see a thing.
I don't know if it was a situation where expectations were so low for it that it exceeded low expectations. Or if it was just it wasn't a really great to put it in wrestling terms. I'm trying to speak to you now, Merrick, as a wrestling fan.
Okay.
In terms of work rate, not the best. In terms of booking, really good. In terms of spectacle, really, really good. Okay. And let me. I want to bring up three things real quick. Okay. First, is that I watched the entire thing. Watched as being a relative term. Before I get into this,
okay.
I was aware of WrestleMania because I was driving back from Virginia last night and I thought I have the best sound system. I love my car's sound system. I'm not like an audio junkie or anything. I just have like 9 speakers and a subwoofer and everything sounds great in my car. So I'm like, I'll just listen to the audio of WrestleMania as I drive from Virginia to New York. And, all that way, I'll keep abreast of the situation and know what I have to go and watch when I get home and yada, yada, yada. And then I said to myself, well, you're obviously going to be streaming the audio along with the video on your phone. What happens if we found a way to maybe just prop the phone up somewhere and you could glance at it as if you're looking at your GPS as you're driving down the road? So I found a streaming site for WrestleMania that worked. Which isn't easy on mobile, by the way, because of Flash and all that. Yeah. And so I wedged my phone horizontally between the volume and the tuner dials on my radio. Just drove all the way from Virginia to New York with WrestleMania playing on my phone. No, I didn't watch it. Eyes on the road.
Oh,
kids.
Of course not. Yeah,
eyes on the road, kids.
Yeah. Okay.
Eyes on the road.
Okay, sure.
Occasionally you'd hear like some hubbub and your eyes glance over to the screen and, oh, look, the DX just ran out and now they're fighting with the NWO during the Triple H Sting match.
I heard Ronda Rousey was there. I saw a clip on YouTube.
That was my other point I was going to make is that they've done this for years, but Vince McMahon and the WWE has done an amazing job finding ways to make their product cool by bringing in the right people sometimes from other sports. Lawrence Taylor, remember that?
Of course.
We're going all the way back to Mania 2 when they had, remember they had the Battle Royale with all of the NFL players, like the William the Refrigerator Perry, Bill Frelick, like all these guys were in a battle royal with wrestlers.
Dude, so what helped put it over the top? Mr. T's presence. Cindy Lauper's presence. Like,
and then you go all the way up to the Attitude Era, one of the greatest cameo appearances.
Mike Tyson.
Was Tyson, who got involved. And so last night, Ronda Rousey's at WrestleMania. They keep showing her picture by ringside. You're like, wow, that's really cool. Here's the darling of UFC who's watching WrestleMania. I did not think she'd get involved because I thought Dana White had heat with Vince McMahon or had heat with wrestling. But she got involved. The Rock appeared on the show and had a back and forth in the ring with Stephanie McMahon and Triple H, who were running down the crowd and saying they owned this whole thing and owned all the people. And the people's champion's not going to put up with that.
Oh, hell no.
The Rock, by the way, got better writers than the last time he had a run on WWE. He was actually really funny last night. So he calls up Ronda Rousey on stage, ring, whatever.
Ring.
And like, he beats up Triple H and she puts Stephanie into like an arm bar thing and kind of throws her out of the ring. And all I'm thinking is like, that's the kind of thing that as a wrestling fan, obviously there's still a stigma attached to any wrestling fan as being a knuckle dragging troglodyte, even though there were 70,000 people in football stadium to watch the thing last night. But that's a moment that's going to get the attention of the regulars.
That's the key right there.
What
is going to get you on the loop? Right. What's the scene that's going to get you on the loop? What's the scene that's going to be spread all over the internet? And what's going to get you on the mainstream highlights? What's the hook? What's the angle? See, here's the thing. A lot of wrestling fans work at ESPN, work at Sportsnet, work at TSN. So when you're working on the evening recap shows, what's the one thing you can pitch as far as a clip goes that can get your favorite quote unquote sport onto the show? Look, Ronda Rousey's there, UFC Women's Champion, one of the most popular athletes. You know, she's on the cover of ESPN, the magazine. Why not? There it is. Boom. All of a sudden, there's the clip. There's the promo.
We all know that hockey doesn't get the celebrity rub. I mean, as far as like cool people that like hockey, maybe John Hamm would be top of the list. But the rest of it is a very sort of Tom Arnold level of celebrity. But celebrities go to games. I mean, Tom Hanks was just at, and Sarah Jessica Parker were just at the Ranger game I was at last week. They come to the games and stuff. But there's a component to hockey coolness and fandom that's always been sort of disconnected from me, which is the endorsement of other athletes in more popular sports here in the United States of hockey. And occasionally you get it. I remember Shaq met Zdeno Chara once. And it was one of the coolest things you've ever seen. This picture of like Shaquille O'Neal and Zdeno Chara hanging out. And like LeBron and Ovi met once. And that was a
cool
deal.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, who is it that Ovechkin met? That's right. It was LeBron James.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's never been this sort of cross-pollinization of other sports with hockey. And I don't know why. Like, there are definitely hockey fans in other sports besides guys like Tom Glavine. There are definitely guys that love hockey in other sports. Right. And we've had celebrities that will come off their ivory, walk down from their ivory towers and say that I like your peasant sport. But there hasn't been a lot of other celebrity athletes in other sports that have ever given hockey the rub that like Ronda Rousey gave wrestling last night. And I don't know why that is.
A strictly American phenomenon, because I assure you, in Canada, all of the actors, all of the athletes, all of the musicians are all Major League Hockey fans. So we're kind of inundated with it. Dude, I play in a league. Like, I play in a rec league that's all, you know, artists and musicians and comedians and, you know, people from the entertainment industry. Like, everybody plays and everybody's a fan. What you're referring to is the specific American star, which is the larger-than-life star, because we don't really have them here in Canada, but you do in the U.S. So that's specifically what you're talking about.
Right, yeah. I'm not talking about the local, you know, the guy in the Argos coming into the Leafs game. Like, what's assumed, right? But like, I'm talking about the your Peyton Manning,
dude,
Derek Jeter,
dude, you know what? You
level
know what's so
megastar.
You know what's
really,
so,
I mean, not
you know what's so funny,
though?
One of the coolest Maple Leaf pictures still is when Blondie played Maple Leaf Gardens and Debbie Harry wore a Maple Leafs jersey. That photograph still gets circulated up here in Toronto all the time. It's a great picture, too.
It's not folded and encased and sticky. You can still look at the picture.
That's a good time.
You know what I mean, though? Like, there's not. It is a very U.S. phenomenon, maybe, I guess. The only time you ever get it is when a team is in, like, the championship round and you start to get, like, oh, the Red Sox are cheering for the Bruins. Oh, look, the Dodgers are cheering for the Kings. The Kings are at the Dodger game. They brought the cup there. Woo. You never get the organic, like when Aaron Rodgers was on the court when Wisconsin's basketball team won this past weekend. Like, you never get this thing where, like, oh, man, the Avs just won this playoff series. And look who's in the locker room. It's Peyton Manning congratulating Gabrielle Landeskog.
You never get that.
You
know what I do like, and the Boston Bruins really did this, you know, brilliantly in their Stanley Cup run in 2011, where they had a different old school Bruin waving the flag, and like I'm more impressed when, and this might just speak to the hockey geek in me, when they bring back the old timers to do something at the game, like the way the Bruins did it for the Stanley Cup run, I thought was fantastic. Hey, look, it's Milt Schmidt. Like, that to me was more impressive than, oh, look, here's a national celebrity who we've reserved two plum seats for, who's going to sit through 20 minutes because he's not going to sit through 60 just to make sure we get the picture or the shot on television. Way more impressive when you bring back one of the old timers from that team to do something at that game. That impresses me. And that gets the goosebumps going more so for me than a celebrity sitting in the stands.
Except for the fact that I think Montreal has most guys cryogenically frozen in the bowels of the Bell Center, and they just like release a latch, and then they bring out one of the guys and he waves the crowd, and he goes back down to his chamber. But I get that, and I guess the one aspect of it is, of course, is I wish more of the celebrities that love hockey were more dedicated to promoting the NHL, but I understand that there's just politics involved in that. I'm sure, Margot Robbie's publicist doesn't want the girl who's gonna blow up, the Wolf of Wall Street girl who's gonna blow up as Harley Quinn in the Suicide Squad, doesn't want her to be the face of the New York Rangers necessarily. But I know this is very sort of like my sport kind of thing. Hashtag like my sport. Please like my sport, which is like what we always say when we start doing the NBA NHL comparisons. But it's just like, I know there's got to be super famous athletes that are friends with hockey players,
love hockey. Right now, you sound really Canadian. Right now, you sound so Canadian.
Why?
Whether it's, well, in Canada, we have this thing about, specifically about entertainers. We don't recognize them until they're recognized in the United States. Then they become superstars in Canada. There are a few exceptions, but until the U.S. waves the magic wand over them, we don't consider them superstars. But when they achieve superstardom in the U.S., all of a sudden they become over-the-top megastars in Canada. It's that we really want America to like us phenomenon. And right now with the, hashtag like my sport, it just sounds to me like a very Canadian thing. It's a very Canadian position. We beg to be accepted by everybody else around us, as opposed to just being comfortable in our skin. I've never heard you, Greg, sound more Canadian than this conversation.
Well, it's always been an interesting conundrum to me. American hockey fans, by and large, have an inferiority complex on two fronts, because the U.S. media reminds us that hockey is an inconsequential sport and promotes other sports above it, and also an inferiority complex because Canadians talk down to us. Yet Canada, as a nation, the mantra is we have an inferiority complex, A. It is a nation founded on the bedrock of inferiority, whether it be the United States or across the pond back in England. So it's a very interesting conundrum. We feel inferior to Canada, who feels inferior overall, and we all love the same inferiority complex sport.
It's a bizarre thing. And the one thing that it produces in Canada, more so per capita than in the United States, is comedy.
Oh yeah,
like
for sure.
The hallmark of Canada is comedy. And I who was it? Mike Myers said this best on David Letterman once. Letterman said, why does it seem to be like most Canadians are funny, or your chief export is funny people? And Mike Myers, in a very thoughtful answer, said, here's the difference, Dave. In America, Americans watch American television. In Canada, Canadians watch American television. There is an ironic level of distance between what Americans watch, because they're part of the culture, versus what Canadians watch, which is one ironic layer removed from what America watches. And I thought that was a brilliant answer.
It is.
We're not part of the culture. We're sort of at a third party point of view away from it.
And that's why I've always gravitated towards Canadians. I have a lot of Canadian friends, is because I'm from New Jersey. And we understand each other. We all understand each other. Paul Romanek's coming up on the show to talk about the Winnipeg Jets and the Chicago Blackhawks, a game that he did, and also just the wackiness of the Western Conference playoff race as well. The question of the day, and we're getting a lot of good answers, is if you could pick one NHL player to cut a WWE-style promo, who would it be?
Steve Ott.
I'll go ahead and agree with everybody who says PK Subban. I think that would have been my answer, and I was really hoping it wouldn't just be PK. That's one of these questions that we ask.
But the thing is, I can't see him doing that, because I can see PK wanting to be too charming and wanting to be too funny. Whereas a guy like Steve Ott doesn't mind being the bad guy.
Oh, see, I was thinking of sort of the charismatic heel promo, like a Roddy Piper. But you're going more with the psychotic, intimidating Brock Lesnar level promo.
A little bit psycho, a little bit Joker-esque.
Yeah. Michisaurus Rex Mullet Yager, it would involve him turning quickly to face the camera, hair flying behind him. Carolyn Bath writes in, Alec Martinez for the babyface promo and Corey Perry for the heel promo.
Perry would be a good one. That's a good one.
Kevin McAllicott, got to be Scott Hartnell. Best of all, though, Biz Nasty. Yeah, I could see Bissonette giving a pretty good promo. Karen Douglas notes that that Jeff Merrick makes notes for the podcast while Wyshynski microwaves some stale coffee, another versus in MPSW.
Problem is, I never actually bother to look at them. I'll sit there and make a couple of pages of notes of things that I want to talk about. Not a chance. Just sit here and stare at this microphone for an hour with you, Wish.
Paul Medina, it has to be Sid the Kid Crosby, nickname, popular, a bit sneaky, reminds me of Randy Orton in a way. Hashtag Random Penguin. Thanks for the great work, gents. Well, thank you. No problem.
Glad the Random Penguins are still coming in after I dropped that, 2 years ago on the podcast?
I know.
Get Random Penguins. Awesome.
Matt K writes in, the best WWE-style promo in the NHL would belong to David Krejci because I secretly believe that Krejci is actually a long-running Andy Kaufman character, the next evolution of Lotka Kravis. And if Krejci is actually Andy Kaufman, then there's no way in hell anyone is topping him on the mic. Yes, this is nonsense. No, I won't stop hoping that it's real. That's true, too.
That's really good.
Yeah, that's very good.
Matt Riegler, imagine if Henrik Lundqvist turned heel. That'd be my penultimate pick.
If he was...
not a chance. Although, there was that moment where he squirted Sidney Crosby in the head last year in the playoffs with the water bottle.
Matt Lichtenstatter writes in, there was a picture with Ovi and Lionel Messi recently. That was cool. You see, that's the thing.
Was there? No, I didn't see that. Really?
Yeah, that'd be a thing.
Oh, I didn't see it. All right, our guest is standing by, Mr. Wyshynski.
Paul Romanek is a great announcer, and he's a man who's going to tell us a thing or two about the Winnipeg Jets. He works for a great company as well, from what I understand.
Thank you very much. Thank
you. And Paul joins us now. What's going on, man?
If you do say so yourself, right?
Yeah, indeed.
Great
indeed.
Company. We love
them. hey, Romy, it's Merrick here. How are you, bud? Great job yesterday, you and MJ. And the one thing as I'm watching this game and I look at that Jonathan Toews tip and I'm thinking to myself, oh, man, you know, the Winnipeg Jets fans are the most creative in the entire NHL universe. And they love their own. They love their Manitobans. But how close are Winnipeg Jets fans, Romy, right now to completely disavowing Jonathan Toews?
Well, I don't know whether they're going to do about disavowing him, but it was, it is one of the best, if not the best buildings in the league in terms of atmosphere to do a game.
Hands down.
And it was
Hands
such
down.
An electric night. And when that goal went in, it was like this massive exhale of breath, like this, and that was the sound of whatever 16,000, whatever the capacity is, just being totally gutted. They were just absolutely silent, and then leaving afterwards, heading out of the building, and people were just looking down at their shoes, shaking their head. It was a tough night for the fans. I think there's still a lot of love for Toews, though. He's native son. Yep. He was in the newspaper up there and had a lot of friends and family at practice. I still think he's much loved. It'll probably take him a while to get over it, but they will.
Oh, yeah, and they'll get over it when he's about 38 or 39 and plays out the string as a Jet. That's always been what I thought would happen with Toews, is that all these Manitoba boys will come home at the end of their career. They're not going to go there during their prime because they can't pay them, but they'll go there at the end to have the victory lap. That's how I always figured it would be with Toews.
The Jets. Probably a good chance of that, and there's a couple of guys, right? It's actually cool, the sort of symbiotic thing between the two franchises, where you have some guys in the Jets who won cups with the Hawks, and then you have three key guys on the Hawks who were born in Winnipeg, and then you have even if you want to track it, you got Bobby Hull, who of course was a legendary Hawk and essentially gave birth to the Winnipeg Jets because he was the first big star with that franchise in the WHA. So yeah, anyway, kind of off topic, but. Please go ahead. Do your show. I won't do it.
Man, I could not even imagine giving birth to the Jets. I mean, the wingspan alone would make it very uncomfortable. So the Jets are at. Oh, by the way, none of those guys have a lake named after them like Toews does. All right. The Jets sit at 90 points right now in the second wild card. Six games left. The Kings have seven games left. They're at 88. They're at Chicago tonight. Do you think the Jets, Paul, are going to pull this thing out with six remaining and the Kings having a game in hand? And let's not sleep on the fact that Calgary will also be in this mix, 89 points, currently third in the Pacific.
Yeah, I mean, I'd hate to bet. I wish I could give you a heartfelt, definitive answer. If I had one, I'd run down and to the local book and place some money on it. But I think the Jets are going to make it, but at whose expense? Because it's so tough to bet against the Kings. The Kings will be a funny story if they manage to scratch and claw and slither their way into the playoffs. They'll still go into the first round in the minds of many as the favorite in the Western Conference, which would be kind of bizarre. The Jets and the Flames, I think more guys, you kind of want them to make it. I have so much admiration for the Jets kind of being the little engine that could. It's a minor market by NHL standards, loyal fan base. They've gone about building and putting a franchise together very, very well. And whether they do it this year or it gets postponed for a year, they're going to be a player in the NHL for, the next sort of 3 to 6 years, whatever that time span is. And Calgary Flames, likewise, a great story the way Bob Hartley's handled the team this year. And, having to have gone down the stretch run without their leader and horse on the blue line, Mark Giordano, is again, it's something really admirable. And then again, at one time, people forget, I'm sure you don't, but the average guy might. The Jets were without four of their top defensemen. Four defensemen.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I guess the belabored answer to your question is I'd like to see them both make it. Just if effort is truly rewarded in life, which it isn't always, they should both make it. But tough to bet against the Kings, too, isn't it?
What it may come down to, Romy, more than anything else, because I can see Los Angeles tucking themselves away here in a few games and being in a solid playoff position. It may just come down to game number 82 at Winnipeg, Calgary Flames. That will be the loudest we'll see the MTS all season long. It may just be that last game, Romy.
Can you imagine what a night that would be? It could. I mean, it could well come down to that. And what a fantastic finish! I love this time of year. We all kind of shoulder through January and February and some miserable hockey when the players are disinterested at times and so are the broadcasters at times because you're kind of right in the middle of it all. You're far from the opening of the season. The playoffs seem pretty distant. But we've clocked into March and now ready to turn the corner into April. And really, the last couple of weeks, the races, particularly in the West Conference, it's just been so engaging. And wouldn't that be a night to have it all come down to the final game between Calgary and Winnipeg? That would be the hottest ticket in the country on that night for sure.
Hands down.
Yeah, without question. And it is interesting to see how many games on the docket still between teams that are vying and jockeying for position. I mean, like, Chicago still has Minnesota on the schedule. They have two with St. Louis on the schedule. It's pretty crazy. Full marks to the NHL schedule makers. I know they had no foresight on this, but it's, there's a lot of stuff.
But hang on.
In the East, Florida, but come, no, Merrick, before you, I know what you're going to say, but Florida and Boston have two games left. Who's going to predict that?
But we're having the same conversation the last few seasons. Like, it always comes down to the last few games, and we look at what's on the docket, and Romy mentioning with Winnipeg and Calgary in game number 82, and the teams that the Los Angeles Kings still have to beat, and look what Chicago's got, and Minnesota's, the team of destiny this year. Every year at this time, we keep saying, man, Steve Hatzepetros is a genius by putting together this schedule, which has, such depth of meaning every single season. I don't know how he does it. I don't know why it just works out this way. It's hockey fate or hockey luck, but we're having the same conversation every year, guys. How great the schedule is down the stretch.
I think, like anything, something that seems relatively simple at first glance, it's a schedule, you work it out and the teams all play one another X number of times. How hard can that be? But as we all know, things that appear that way, generally, when you scratch below the surface, there's a hell of a lot of work that's gone into it. And I think there probably is. I don't think it's just by complete luck. I would guess, not having discussed it with anybody at the league, maybe you have, but it sure seems that a lot of thought has gone into it. And when you look at, you know, they're playing, heading down the stretch, as you would have, they're playing conference contenders, and you just look coming down. I mean, it's a very – the Calgary and Winnipeg schedule I've got in front of me, they're fairly – they don't exactly mirror one another, but I mean, they both have a game against St. Louis, who they both enjoyed mixed success against. Winnipeg's got one against Minnesota. They've got, of course, the big one against Calgary that we've talked about. The Flames have the one against Winnipeg. Then they've got the Kings in there, a team who they're battling. So if anything, looking at the two, I think Calgary's probably got a slightly easier run in than Winnipeg, but I mean, yeah. Who knows? You're right. I mean, it's just a great fight to the finish. It's so entertaining.
Last one for me, Paul, talking about the Chicago Blackhawks. I have a theory that it might behoove the Blues to get them in the first round this year. Like, I know the Blues aren't playing their best hockey. I know the Blackhawks have one over on them. I just feel like this Blackhawks team minus Kane and this Blues team that seems a little bit more built for the offensive grind of the playoffs, it might be time to catch them in round one. But do you think that I'm being dumb? And that the Blackhawks are going to probably win the West?
No, I mean, not at all. My take on it would be not far off from yours. I thought that Mike Johnson brought up a great point last night, and it came out of we were talking just on the walk back from the rink at the morning skate, and we always go over, okay, so what are some of the things we want to cover tonight, and I want to make sure that we get to the things that he thinks are important because he's the color guy and the expert. And one of the things that we talked about was a key to the game will be how Chicago can contend with the aggressive and speedy forecheck of the Winnipeg Jets. And it just struck me as, that's not a statement we would have been making a couple of years ago. And to put it more simply, I think Chicago, they have an older core, and they still rely on that older core of players. And I think that they're getting slower, and they maybe lost half a step. They're certainly not past it, and they're still a good team, and they're still a contender. However, they're not the Chicago of a couple of seasons ago, I don't think. I don't think they're as quick. I don't think that they can handle the aggressive forecheck as well as they could a couple of years ago. You could see a team like Winnipeg gave them problems. The big ace in the hole that they do have are guys who played together a long time and a defense that moves the puck exceptionally well in the transition game out of their own end. But still, I think that Chicago could be had. I don't think they've looked like the world beaters, the powerhouse that they were with this core group of guys 2-3 years ago.
And last one here, Romy, and we associate you with NHL coverage. I still associate you with the WJCs. And the other thing as well is international hockey, whether it's a Spengler or various IIHF events around Europe. If you could import one thing from European hockey into the NHL. To me, it's the not IIHF size, but more the Finnish size of ice. That would be my answer. But from your purview, Romy, if you could import one thing from European hockey into the NHL, what would it be?
Okay, well, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to give you two. Okay. One is the point you brought up. You read my mind. I think a larger ice surface would benefit the game, benefit the fans. I think it would, once adjustments were made, I think it would be a more entertaining game. I think it would open up the lanes a little bit more, and it would be more exciting ultimately to watch and more fun for the players to play in. And the Finnish approach is perfect. The traditional international size rink, a little bit too big. NHL rink, I think, a little bit too small. The players have outgrown it. The Finnish hybrid rink is a perfect solution. So that's one. The other one is that at most of the European tournaments and even league games, they take a page from, it's a different sports culture, but from European soccer, and that is the crowd is the show. It's the chants. It's the singing. It's the atmosphere in the rink. Get rid of the nonstop 120 decibel pounding and identikit pregame stuff and scoreboard things during the game that every team in the league does. I'd love to see that taper
and,
back. It won't, but I'd love to see that.
Yeah. I'm with you 100%. And a follow-up to that, are there better fans anywhere than the Latvians?
Latvians are great. If you're talking club team, Riga is outstanding, but an honorable mention would go to the fans in Bern in Switzerland. They sell out every game in the Swiss League, and it is, I believe, the most well-attended hockey club in terms of fans coming out and sellouts outside of North America. They will get an honorable mention. It's a great place to go watch a game. And again, there's a little bit of stuff in the scoreboard, but guys, it's all about the singing, the drums, the chanting, and the very, very soccer-like crowd. And I'd like the Spengler is like that as well. I'd love to see more of that and less of the identikit nonstop visual and oral assault that we get in rinks now.
You left out the drinking, Paul.
Love the drinking.
There you go. Thanks, Romy.
Okay, thank you very much. My pleasure.
We'll talk soon. Paul Romanek from the NHL on Sportsnet.
Really assuming one of you guys was going to talk about the ads on jerseys. That's what we're going to import, no? All the ads?
No.
On the jerseys?
No. Yeah, or the golden helmet. Could you imagine getting away with that in the
I
NHL?
Love the golden helmet. Well, you don't like the golden helmet?
I just don't. If I'm a player, I thought come on, why don't you just put a bullseye on someone's chest? The culture is different here. I know. Listen, dude, I think it'll be freaking hilarious and awesome. But you know what the culture is like in North America for hockey.
I would get a golden
helmet.
Could you imagine what? I mean, I know that everybody hates Sid already, but let's say you're Sid.
Oh my God!
You're the Art Ross leader,
and you
get to wear a golden helmet with like Thor wings on it. Oh my God!
It would be awesome. Amazing. But there's no chance it would ever happen. Oh, I know. It would be I've thought about it so many times. If you have the gold helmet concept.
And instead of a stick, a scepter. You use a scepter to play the puck.
No, that's when you sit on the – when you have your own chair on the bench and you have your stick beside you, but you hold the scepter and you have that crown, that gold crown.
Yeah. Congratulations. You're leading the league in points. You're now Triple H, who has to wear – come out as Conan the Destroyer whenever he wrestles.
Oh, God.
Paul Vogel writes in, I would have Jonathan Toews giving a Jake the Snake Roberts style promo, quiet, intense, semi-crazy. I guess Andrew Shaw would be fun for the possibility of him rambling like the Ultimate Warrior. It's pretty good, too. I've also seen some Ilya Bryzgalov as the Ultimate Warrior ones as well. Couple things I want to get to before we run out of time here. I think we covered the playoff races a little bit. The only thing you need to know tonight is that the Lightning have a chance to clinch against the Habs, who've already clinched. And that's a pretty big game. If you want to read something that I think is a little, I have ideas sometimes, and sometimes they're good and sometimes they're bad, but this one's a good one, I think. This game tonight should mean something because it's two teams that are vying for the President's Trophy. Damian Cox got the ball rolling this morning on an idea on how to better reward the President's Trophy winner, Merrick. And he said that adding home playoff games to the – to the schedule for the President's Trophy would be good. But I'm a guy that doesn't like a lot of tinkering with the playoffs. So my idea was this. You win the President's Trophy, you are assured of the number 15 overall pick in the draft that year. You don't monkey with the lottery. All the teams that miss the playoffs get their lottery picks. But you get the highest draft pick or the lowest draft, however you want to term it. For the playoff teams, you were assured of getting number 15 in the draft every year.
So you are earning something, and you get a significant award at the draft from it. Like there was an idea, and I can't remember who presented it at the Sloan Conference, who came up with the idea of to get rid of tanking, you award the first overall pick to the team that gets the most points once they're eliminated from the playoffs.
That was a dude. Now, I don't remember his name either, but Jonathan Willis, who's been on the show before, has a story
about
Sportsnet today. Yeah,
that's right.
I read
it this morning. But first of all, as an aside, and I read your piece this morning on the President's Trophy, the league doesn't have a flipping president anymore. Exactly. How would you feel about calling it the Commissioner's Trophy?
I would be fine with that, although it would make everybody very oogie, I think, considering who the commissioner is.
Well, but, I mean, we haven't seen a president since Ziegler. That means commissioner. What's the president? Does Barack Obama hand it out?
Can you picture somebody as we head towards the next lockout saying, I don't want to win that stinking award? Some Chelios
going to lock us out.
Rejecting the commissioner's trophy. Let's throw out a game tonight, boys. I don't want to be associated with that guy.
I'm glad you wrote that, by the way, that the league doesn't have a president anymore, because I really do think that's something that needs to be renamed.
It's stupid.
What, and also, president in the NHL.
But the worst part about it is that it's president.
There's not even a
with the apostrophe after the S. I hate that.
There's not even a president in the NHL Players Association anymore. The last one was Trevor Linden.
Yep. There's no president.
There are team presidents that we've seen, but the league level and PA level? No.
You could name it the Governor's Trophy. That would make sense if you didn't want to go to the commissioner. That's fine, too.
I guess.
Call it the Governor's Ball. Make it a big brass ball.
Make it a big
themes.
Wow. Hadn't even thought about that before.
It'd be wonderful. So that's my idea. I think it's a good one, except for the fact that I believe it was the 2008 Detroit Red Wings would have won the Cup and the President's Trophy and would have drafted Eric Carlson. So there is a downside to it sometimes, in the sense that the rich would get significantly richer in some cases.
But they're used to finding gems late in the draft, though, so it should be par for the course.
The only other thing you got the Montreal and Tampa tonight, and then obviously over in the West you got Chicago and L.A. is a huge game, St. Louis, Vancouver, Calgary, Dallas, huge games. Are the Senators done? 86 points. 7 games left, 89 for the Bruins, 6 left.
Yeah, I think so. And you look at the way things are trending with the net mining situation. It was a nice run. Listen, and I come from a company, and I work for a company that, you know, would love as many Canadian teams as the playoffs as we can get. Thank you very much. But I think this is it for the Ottawa Senators. I would be happy to be wrong. This is based on nothing other than what my gut tells me. But it kind of feels like that's it for Ottawa. I would love to be proven wrong, but I think that's it.
The Kitty Cats, 85 points, 4 in back of Boston. Both have 6 games left, and 2 with the Bruins left on schedule.
Oh, yeah, and Nick Pukes had with back surgery. Well, as long as Jagr is snapping into a game like breaking sticks, come on, Grandpa, lead the Cats to the promised land.
It's crazy. Shane Doan's hit on Chris Letang. Letang, the concussion. Doan, no supplemental discipline. What did you think of the play?
Fine.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a hit. He was near the boards. He went in awkwardly. He's got a concussion. Does Shane Doan have a history of predatory hits? Sure does. This wasn't one of them.
But he's such a nice guy.
I assure you, he may be a very lovely man off the ice. But going back to his days playing with the Kamloops Blazers on the line with Jerome McGinley and Darcy Tucker, Edzo, this guy plays mean out there. Make no mistake about it, Edzo. This guy's always played mean.
He's such a... That was what was so hilarious. Remember when Dustin Brown... Was it Dustin Brown who laid out... Was it McCulloch or somebody? It was Roosevelt that he laid out in that series against the Coyotes a couple of years back. And Doan and them got all huffy about it. Like, come on, man. Shane, you're one of the dirtiest players
in
the league.
I know. I always say he's one of the dirtiest players in the league, but he walks in, sometimes crosses over the line. He's a physical player. He always has been. So he's pretty two shoes off the ice when he's on the ice.
Finally, we did not have a show Friday, so we didn't really have a chance to talk about Tankapalooza. Mm. What did you make of the behavior of the Sabres fans in that game?
No problem. No problem.
And the requisite criticism that was given.
As long as the NHL incentivizes teams losing, like once you're out of it, to really lose and really blow it. I mean, here's the thing. So management has bought into tanking, okay? And now the city and the fans have bought into tanking. The players haven't. They still have pride and all that. I know it's awkward for them, but I think you're misplacing your anger. You look at the post-game comments. You want to be mad at someone, be mad at Tim Murray, who on the weekend is talking about how he's drooling over Connor McDavid. Of course, we knew that. We didn't know this from day one. So the fans bought into it. So the fans are behind what the team, not the players, but what the team is selling.
You nailed it.
Until you change how you do your draft specifically when there are franchise-changing players like Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel involved in it, this is what you're going to get. This is what you're going to get.
The fans are essentially taking their marching orders from management.
Management
100%. Pointed this team in a direction that was downward and put the
pedal
on the accelerator.
Who was it? Which I can't remember. Who was it? Who was it on Buffalo? One of the players afterwards that went out and blasted the fans.
It was Weber.
Okay. Really easy to do. Really easy to do. I dare you to share that same venom with management. Go out. Why don't you take a shot at Tim Murray for putting this team together like this? And every time a goaltender makes a save, you trade him. Because there you have skin in the game. You have no skin in the game when you criticize a fan. Okay? No skin in the game. You risk zero loss.
Right.
Why don't you vent something publicly about Tim Murray? I dare you. I frickin' dare you.
And he never would. The thing about it, though, is also, and I pointed this out at the time, too, like, players do this all the time. They make cold, emotionally distant decisions. They overlook the loyalty of fans. They overlook the loyalty to a franchise. They make decisions based on what they feel will be the best thing for them. That's exactly what the fans did. The fans decided to approach that game knowing, believing what the best thing was going to be for the franchise. It wasn't a slight to the players. They didn't want the players to be hurt because at the end of the day, they want the players to succeed. And getting Connor McDavid means the team can succeed. So at the end of the day, they did the same kind of cold, hard, push loyalty to the side decision that players do all the time. And I don't understand how anybody can give them grief for it because they're doing it within the context of what, like you said, how the system's gamed right now with the NHL.
Until you change it, things like this are going to happen. You'll get it next year with Austin Matthews. You'll get it 2 years from now with Nolan Patrick or the Brandon Weekings. It's just the way it is.
Off we go, ladies and gentlemen. Back tomorrow for more fun and games.
Yay!
Thanks to Paul Romanek for joining us today. Yeah. Thanks to producer Maddie. Maddie, did we pull that junior thing? Because I really feel like that we did it and I forgot to mention it.
Maybe we'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll do it
Let's
tomorrow.
Let's do it on tomorrow's show.
Do it on tomorrow's show.
I got to go.
Get out
Bye,
of here,
everybody.
Sir. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye. Congratulations to Seth Rollins, your new WWE champion. Bye. Thank you.